Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, America. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, along with Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. How you guys doing this evening?
Doing
great.
Good.
Thank you.
Ready awesome. For another day of dealing with the injustices in our wonderful nation.
Yeah, we got a good show lined up for this evening. Our call-in number is 347-205-9620. 347-205-9620. Cliff, let's do a couple of shout-outs here real quick.
All right. Want to do a shout-out to Scott Osborne of,
Contending for Truth Radio.
Yeah, Contending for Truth Radio, and also Duke Brooks, you know, the one who, helps us on Tuesday night, gives us the platform to be able to, spread the word. We appreciate it. You guys have been there for us, and we want to make sure that we let you know that we appreciate it.
We very much appreciate that. Also, a shout-out to Dallas Burgess. He wrote a song. I think we're going to play it a little bit later in the program this evening. It's called the Free the IRP 6 Anthem, and Dallas is getting a lot of hits on that on SoundCloud. And so, we appreciate what Dallas is doing out there on that. Ethel, what do we need to do as far as, to get the listener audience participation?
Well, let me say, let's have people reach out to Eric Holder's office. We want you to call Eric Holder's office, the Attorney General of the United States, Mr. High Sheriff. Let him know, that we would like for him to do, that you would like for him to do, investigate the missing transcript for the IRP 6. And you can reach Mr. Holder's office at 202-514-2003 or 2005.
Also, we have that petition out there on change.org where we talk about the 200 pages of the transcript that was omitted at the hands of Judge Christine Arguello and the court reporter Darlene Martinez. That is a key part to the appeal for the IRP 6. So go out to change.org, do a search on IRP 6, sign that petition. I'm going to do something a little different tonight, guys. If folks are listening right now, we're going to talk about this again. We're going to kind of run down this list again. But if you're listening, go out there, sign the petition, and then after you sign it, call into the show. We want to hear, you signed it. We want to hear, why you signed it.
Absolutely.
Because there has to be some motivation. We talk about it all the time that this could happen to you. This could be right on your doorstep.
Exactly.
Now, we got a lot going on tonight. So if we have an opportunity to take your call, we're definitely going to take it because we want to hear, why you signed that petition.
Exactly.
And what else can folks do, Ethel, to help us out?
Well, something else that we're asking is that people contact your local TV stations, your local radio stations, and ask them, why aren't they covering this case of the missing over 200 pages of missing federal trial transcript? And you got six men sitting in prison, and the transcript's not there.
That's right.
Go out and call them. Ask them why you're not covering it.
And we're hearing it all the time lately that, I didn't hear anything about this. I don't know anything about it. Why haven't I heard anything about this? And so, Cliff, what else can folks do at the national level that we're looking at folks to help us out?
Yeah, we want to ask people that if you have a platform or know someone who has a platform on a national level that could help us propel this case, get some more exposure to it, call us up, let us know, send us an email so that we can get this out there and let the general public, even on a greater scale, know about these type of injustice. So if you know somebody or you have a national platform, contact us. Let us know if you're willing to allow us to get on there and help get the word out. We appreciate it.
And as we always say, follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook. Go to our websites and get more information about Just Cause. Get more information about the IRP 6.
Mm-hmm.
We have the a-justcause.com, a-justcause.com. Also, we have ajcradio.com. And that's an excellent site that has all the information about AJC Radio. And then also, for more information to follow us as far as follow along with us as we talk about the IRP 6 case, you can go to freetheirp6.org, freetheirp6.org. Our disclaimer, Cliff, Ethel, and I are not attorneys, and A Just Cause is not a program that provides legal advice. We suggest you contact your legal professionals for your specific legal needs. And the comments and opinions of the guests and callers are not necessarily those of A Just Cause or A Just Cause Coast to Coast. But as usual, thanks for calling in. Thanks for listening in, I should say. And we got a really good show. Cliff, as you were talking about, you know, if you have a national platform, on Tuesday night we had a great show, you know, with Dr. Wilmer Leon from Sirius XM Radio Channel 110, Inside the Issues with Dr. Wilmer Leon. And he was on our show, excellent back-and-forth dialogue, talking about the IRP6 case. Also, he had us on his show on Sirius XM last Saturday, and both of those shows have been uploaded to our website at ajcradio.com, ajcradio.com. You can listen to them in their entirety. We also broke out certain parts of that because one of our attorneys, Mark Garagos, we broke that part out. And so if folks want to listen to Mr. Garagos' comments directly, they can do that. A couple of the IRP6 called into the show. And so you got David Banks and Gary Walker were also on there. And so we've broken those out as well. And so you could do a little bit of search on that. Let me see. Again, our number, 347-205-9620. 347-205-9620. On the show this evening, we're going to be talking about, we're going to kind of dive a little bit into the IRP6 case. And one of the things, right at the crux of this case, was the issue of staffing companies and the allegations of IRPs doing wrong as far as how they use staffing companies to conduct business. We're going to dispel that tonight, and so we're going to talk a little bit about staffing industry and how it applies in this case and how it applies just in business in general. So that's going to be coming up a little bit later. For our exoneree moment at the top of the next hour, we're going to have Mark Clements. That is just an incredible story as well. I mean, the injustice that we hear about just through the exoneree moment on this program, it just blows you away. And some of this stuff, it just needs to stop. And that's what we are all about. That's what A Just Cause is all about. And then in a few minutes, we're going to have Jay Arrington from the Maryland Daily Examiner. He's going to be calling in. He has drafted up a new installment to his series that he has written about the IRP6. So Jay is going to kind of give us a little bit of insight on his next installment. It's not ready to go yet, but he's going to give us a little preview of that. So we're looking forward to that. Also representing the staffing industry, we're going to have Joseph Thurman on. And so if that name sounds familiar, Thurman, that's my son. And so he's going to be on talking with us as well. And so let's get this thing rolling. Let's talk a little bit about what's in the news. We kind of touched on this story on Tuesday evening, but didn't get a chance to talk about it. And this in the news is just absurd. It's talking about the privately owned prisons suing states over lack of prisoners. What's up with that?
Yeah, this is totally, totally just horrible and disgusting. When I read this, I mean, at the middle of this article, it's stating privately owned state prisons have begun suing states for millions of dollars because they aren't filled to capacity with inmates. And they had this advocacy group that they're keeping, you know, anonymous, you know, just for, I guess, maybe for their safety, probably. But in one of the things that they dug up, they said this group has reviewed more than 60 contracts. Oh, actually, the group is called In the Public Interest. So they did. Mm-hmm. They ended up putting their name in there. So In the Public Interest has reviewed more than 60 contracts between private prison companies and state and local governments across the country and found language mentioning quotas for prisoners in nearly two-thirds of those contracts reviews. Those quotas range from a mandatory occupancy of, get this, 70% in California to up to 100% in some of the prisons in Arizona. So you have these prisons, these privately owned prisons, mm-hmm. that the state has made an agreement with them. In Arizona, you will keep us at 100% capacity. So 100% occupied. Mm-hmm. And in this article, it says that's going to require a lot of fraudulent arrests to achieve. And it just speaks to how crooked the system is. How do you say that as a state, we will guarantee give you enough prisoners to keep your whole prison full. Now, the prison system is supposed to be about reform, about getting people back, you know, having a normal life after they pay their debt to society. This
you
is
say,
just
how,
nasty.
Cliff? How? It's called corruption.
Yeah, oh, it's called deep dish corruption.
And then, and mandatory minimum sentences.
This is ridiculous.
That's what it's called. That's how they're going to keep them filled.
And, you know, it also talks here about how, you know, and everyone knows about the ticket writing quotas. And so, you know, they even kind of talk a little bit about that here in the sense that no one likes to even talk about the fact that you got street cops out there that are, you know, have to meet quotas when it comes to traffic tickets. And now they're saying, you know, if we have to, if they go to this, man, we're in some deep trouble.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. Yeah, of course. And the thing about it, and this article speaks to it as well, is that you cannot blame these privately run prisons.
Exactly.
Yeah, if they put that on the table and say, hey, what type of quotas are we talking about?
That's right.
I mean, the states should have had the, you know, the gumption to say, we will not give you any quota what a percentage of occupancy we get. So it's the government that's at fault of these states that say, We've signed this to guarantee you 100% occupancy.
And you know some of the weird economics that they use in this? If you read a little bit further in here, they talk about it lowering the unemployment rate because the prisons, you know, they employ most of the city, you know, wherever they build them. And, you know, they build them out in some small towns. Mm-hmm. So everybody and their brother and their cousin and their granddaddy and everybody else works at the prison. So it lowers the unemployment because of that.
Of course.
Then it lowers the unemployment because when you're at 100% capacity, those people that are in prison don't count against the employment and the unemployment numbers.
Right. And how do you
say that? Is that not twisted?
That is twisted. Though. You subtract the percentage of men in prison and women and say, hey, those people aren't unemployed.
They don't count.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're not citizens, really, of our state.
Exactly. And, you know, like you said, Cliff, the writer of this article, you know, he said he has nothing against privatization. He has nothing against private industry, you know, making some money.
Mm-hmm.
But it's this quota thing. And even under the conservative initiatives on rightoncrime.com, they have an article that talks about part of the solution is to privatize some of the prisons.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't take it to this extreme. And like you say, Ethel, when it comes to the mandatory
minimum,
you know, that actually only contributes to it. So, folks, if you want to read a little bit more about this one, this one is posted on posted in Economy and Health Freedom comments on Lions of Liberty. It was posted on December 6th, so it was last week, by Brian McWilliams. So look up Brian McWilliams and privately owned prisons suing states over lack of prisoners. That is just crazy.
Wow.
Okay, our number is 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620. That previous story takes us right into our conservative champions commentary, where we're going to talk about congressional conservatives leading on prison reform. What's with that one, Ethel?
That's awesome. You know, they were talking about the conservative headquarters chairman, Richard Vigari, I believe his name is. I hope I pronounced that correctly. He's the signer of the Right on Crimes Declaration of Principles. And he was talking about in the op-ed article that was in the New York Times that conservatives should lead the way on prison reform. You know, they're talking about the three principles, you know, for them is public safety, compassion, and controlled government spending.
What's that second word again?
Yeah. Compassion.
I don't,
you know.
Yeah, they need to put that word in the dictionary of the BOP.
And
yeah.
That is so true, okay? And it, talking about, you know, those three things lie at the core of conservative philosophy. And, you know, conservatives have more credibility than liberals in addressing prison reform. You know, that's awesome. And they were talking about Rand Paul, you know, is co-sponsoring a bill with the liberal Democratic Patrick Leahy of Vermont, you know, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And if that particular bill becomes a law, it would allow federal judges a so-called safety valve. And it would do away with the congressionally imposed minimum mandatory punishments. So that's awesome, you know, for them to do that.
And you know, like we were saying before, that's part of the problem is this mandatory minimum stuff.
Yes, it is.
And then, you know, like we were talking on Tuesday evening, when you have nonviolent criminals, or I shouldn't say criminals, when you have nonviolent people who have been accused of doing something wrong, And those who are wrongly convicted, mm-hmm. wrongly incarcerated, mm-hmm. you know, they need to look at alternatives as far as, you know, parole and,
yeah.
And looking at things like monitoring systems. I mean, we already talked about how, you know, in some places it costs as much as like $79 a day
right.
to incarcerate someone, where it could be as little as $3.50 a day
yeah.
for some sort of other alternative to incarceration.
Yeah.
And also in this article about, you know, conservatives leading the way on prison reform, it actually, you know, we're going to have to give a shout out to Texas. Because
okay.
on this one, I mean, you know, a lot
wait
of stuff.
Wait a minute.
See, so this shows we're not biased against anybody or for anybody.
Right.
If you're doing right, you're doing right. There are parts of Texas that, you know, y'all got some issues. You got some judges down there that's a little
what
bit
What is
twisted.
That old thing, yeah, that statement you guys said, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater?
Don't throw him out with the bathwater
right there.
But this one says, in the past several years, there's been a dramatic shift on crime and punishment policies across the country. It really started in Texas in 2007. The state said no. Texas said no to building 8 more prisons, and they began to shift nonviolent offenders from state prison into alternatives by strengthening probation and parole supervision and treatment.
So
Texas was able to avert nearly $2 billion in
wow.
projected correction
Ooh.
Spending increases, and its crime rate is declining. At the same time, the state's parole failures have dropped.
Shout out for Texas.
So Texas is basically saying we have parole violations dropping by real close to 40%, 39%. We saved $2 billion, and it was all because we refused to put these people in
because
prison.
Because they implemented
right.
some common sense.
Some common sense.
Yeah.
Well, look at that.
Wow.
So,
awesome.
Hey, shouts
awesome.
Out to Texas.
You hear me?
You know.
Hey,
y'all did that one right.
Hey, our number is 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620. Let's bring Jay Arrington in from the Maryland Daily Examiner. Jay, are you there, sir? How you doing?
Hey, Sam, how are you this evening?
I'm doing well.
Hey, Jay.
Hi, Ethel, how are you?
Awesome, thank you.
Good to hear from you again, my friend.
Jay Arrington with the Maryland Daily Examiner. He's a very stark supporter of the IRP6 and a supporter of A Just Cause and A Just Cause Radio. Jay has done a series on the IRP6, and you can find it out there on ajustcause.com, a-justcause.com. And, Jay, I understand you got another installment coming, the last one that you had. And just to let you know, Jay, I think that one hit 100,000 impressions. And so, you know, it really did well. And Jay is doing installments talking about the IRP6 case, and the last one he did an open letter to Attorney General Eric Holder. So, Jay, tell us about this one.
Well, Sam, thanks again for having me, and hello, Cliff. I'm sorry I didn't get to say hello. But it's just a continuation. It's sort of like a pen pal. I've established a pen pal relationship with Attorney General Holder, which he probably doesn't have any knowledge of, but hopefully he does.
I was going to say, Jay, is he writing back?
if he writes back, it probably won't be what I want to hear. It'll probably be a Dear Jay letter, you know? But in any event, all levity aside, this particular installment is a follow-up to the first open letter, and it talks about from the context or perspective of President Mandela's passing and what he meant to the world as far as fighting for freedom, the fairness and the against injustice, and even being able to turn the other cheek, as it were, and to have compassion for his enemies. And I took it upon myself to inject to Mr. Holder in this particular letter that, you know, some of the words that he spoke in his statement from the Department of Justice about the passing of President Mandela and about how President Mandela was a hero to him, and I've heard President Obama say the same thing, and it just struck me as ironic that, you know, you're able to stand tall and talk about how you revered this man, as most people did, and it's understandable. However, the best way to honor those that you consider your heroes is to emulate them and to follow in their footsteps. And the only exception to that being is that if you happen to go further than they did with your work, because as Christ said, you will do greater things than I have done. And if you consider yourself, you know, this person a hero, then you should try, you should do your best to emulate them and to make sure that your hero worship of them is worthy of that.
Exactly.
And so I just wanted to point out to Attorney General Holder that, you know, if you have the ability and you have the knowledge of six men being wrongly imprisoned, and you have the power to change that dynamic, and you choose not to change that dynamic, then, you know, you're not doing what you say your hero did.
That's right. Hey, Jay, sit tight. We got to take this quick break. We're on the phones with Jay Arrington of the Maryland Daily Examiner. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. We'll be right back right after this.
Hi, I'm Mickey Palillo. I live in Bluefield, Virginia, and I'm a breast cancer survivor. 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime, and last October, I became one of those women. Thanks to early detection, I have a wonderful prognosis. I am now one of the 98% who will survive. Battling cancer is not easy, but early detection, support from family and friends, wonderful doctors, and continuing research make the journey much more bearable.
When does it stop being partly cloudy and start being partly sunny? Why is the word abbreviation so long? Are English muffins just muffins in England? Why is it called a washing line and not a drying line? Do fish get thirsty? If ghosts can walk through doors, why don't they fall through floors? Do you yawn when you sleep? If prunes are dried plums, how do they make prune juice? Why do doctors leave the room when you change? They're going to see you naked anyway. Do bald chefs wear hairnets? How much deeper would the ocean be if all the sponges were taken out? Do you believe someone who says they're a chronic liar? Why is sandwich bread square and sandwich meat round? Life's full of hard questions. Ask one more. You might just save a life.
Pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number 1 on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. The odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Ethel Cliff, how you guys doing?
Awesome, thanks.
Good.
Hey, Jay Arrington is on the phone with us from the Maryland Daily Examiner. Jay was just kind of giving us a quick overview of his next installment in the series of articles written on behalf of the IRP6. And Jay, give us a little bit more on that and just kind of close out your thoughts as to your pen pal, your newly found pen pal, in Attorney General Eric Holder. You know, well, and by the way, Jay, you know, the IRP6, they and I've said this to you before on the air and in private, the IRP6, they really love your writing style. They really appreciate the support that you give on an ongoing basis. So I just want to throw that in there. So go ahead, Jay. Tell us about this next installment, and then we'll move on to the next segment.
All right. Thank you very much, Sam. Just to close, I just wanted to say that the basis for this particular installment in the perspective of President Mandela's passing, what we had happened in we know why what happened to President Mandela happened. They denied him his humanity because of the color of his skin. And what we have had happen to the IRP6 in part is tantamount to that same type of situation. It's prosecutorial apartheid. When you deny me the right to defend myself against my accusers because you have an agenda that you want to oppress my right to the American dream as you have laid it out before me, then you are no better than the person that did what they did to President Mandela. Mm-hmm. And for someone to have the power to right this wrong and not do it, you don't deserve the right to say that man was your hero, because you're not emulating what you said you revere. And that's all I really need to say. We'll continue to fight, and the fight will continue, but we will prevail, because right is right, and right don't wrong nobody.
There you go.
Right. And the thing is, I mean, we're not asking Attorney General Holder to do anything outside the ordinary, just and in his position to do an investigation. If he finds that there is no wrongdoing, you know, obviously something will be wrong with him, but, you know, do the investigation. Right. How is it that he cannot pick up the phone? And you know, Dr. Leon, when he was on Tuesday, he said all Holder has to do is pick up the phone and say, hey, where is the transcript? And let the ball roll from there. One phone call, ask one question, say, I want the transcripts in my office, and hang up. That's all it would take.
Yeah, he's too busy trying to cover his own butt with this Fast and Furious prep that's been going on.
Oh, they're going after.
As quiet as it's kept, guys, don't think for one moment that he doesn't know. He knows.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He knows about this case. He's just pretending that he doesn't. He knows.
He does. And you know what? When I've called his office, and the people in his office tell me that he knows about it. So we know he knows about it. Absolutely.
It's like, he wants, like, do something.
And Jay, I think you make an excellent point. It's like, if you want to emulate someone and you want to call them your hero, then do something that's going to put you in that same class, so to speak, to where you leave a legacy to say that, hey, I did this and I didn't care what anybody said. I didn't care about what the political fallout might be. I mean, I doubt in a situation like the IRP6, there's not going to be any political fallout. In the situation of other people who are in this same type of situation, there's not going to be any political fallout, because this is something that needs to be corrected. And folks need to, you know, get a hold of that. Our number is 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620. That's Jay Arrington of the Maryland Daily Examiner, and talking about his latest installment on the IRP6. You can go out to the Maryland Daily Examiner and read that article. Oh, well, actually, Jay, when is that going to be posted?
Well, I'm sure it'll probably be posted no later than Monday. I'm hoping it'll be tomorrow, but I don't know for sure. I sent it out to the publisher. I just have to wait for him to do it.
Okay.
But I know it should be at least by Monday.
So once you know that it's final and it's good to go, then I know you're going to shoot us off a final of it, and then we'll get it posted on our websites as well.
But, you know, so, you're welcome to go. You can go ahead and do a PR on it if you want. You know,
all right.
My article.
We'll do that. We'll do that.
You have a copy. You're welcome to go ahead and do that, because, you know, you can do that if you like, you know, ahead of time. It'll, you know, for your purposes, you know.
Awesome. Okay. We'll definitely do that. Hey, Jay, I don't know what your schedule is like tonight, but if you want to hang out with us, we're going to be talking about the staffing industry and how it applies to the IRP6. And you can listen in, or If you want to chime in and make a comment, you just hit that button on your screen and let us know.
Well, I had other plans this evening, so I have to go ahead and do what I had to do already. So.
Gotcha. Hey,
but anyway, guys, I'll be in touch, and you know, keep a good thought, and you know, like I said, we will prevail.
Well, absolutely.
And as usual, Jay, it is always nice to hear from you, and we appreciate you being in the fight with us. And, hey, Jay, I'll be giving you a call a little bit later on, okay?
God bless.
All right, man. Have a good evening.
Peace.
Okay. In the studio with us talking about the staffing industry and how it applies to the IRP 6 case, we're going to be bringing in Joe Thurman. And he's going to be talking about that here in a second. So, Cliff, let's kind of set the stage before we start talking to Joe and give a little bit of background for the listeners who are not familiar with the IRP 6 case. And, you know, let's give that overview and how we got to the point of talking about the staffing industry.
Right. Well, the case of the IRP 6, it started with IRP Solutions. And IRP started in February of 2003. Marketing its flagship case investigative lifecycle software solution, commonly known as SILC, to major federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies. And prospects for IRP solutions included Department of Homeland Security, Department of Justice, the New York City Police Department, and the IRP executives were convinced that they were on the verge of closing business with at least one of these major governmental agencies until the business was raided by the FBI in February of 2005. And the raid was for allegedly scamming staffing companies. But what really happened is that the company was responding to a request from the government to modify their SILC software and got behind on paying invoices. And in order to modify the software, IRP had to use temporary staffing companies that specialized in technology professionals. So IRP brought these temps on board to work on the software. But when IRP didn't close business as quickly as it thought, that's when invoices went delinquent and allegations of wrongdoing came up. So this case, the IRP 6 case, is a corporate debt collection case that got criminalized by an overzealous FBI agent and an over-empowered assistant U.S. attorney named Matthew Kirsch.
And, you know, Cliff, you know, and we know the story. And so, you know, for those who don't know, I mean, IRP did nothing any different than any other company. And IRP was a startup company, and they, you know, when they engaged the services of the staffing companies went into this thing with their eyes wide open.
Absolutely.
You have company, you know, just in the last couple of weeks or so, we have been doing an in-depth analysis of this even more so because, I mean, you know, we've been looking into it all along, but every now and then we have to revisit it. And, you know, the witnesses that were called into the courtroom in the IRP 6 case, they were impeached one after the other. A lot of them weren't even familiar with the facts or the details of the case. And the facts are that when IRP engaged the services of some of these staffing companies did Dun & Bradstreet background checks. Some of them knew that IRP was a startup company.
That's
they
right.
knew that the company was working with various agencies to secure contracts. They knew that there was no major revenue stream going, and they went on and did business because of the fact that they, you know, there's a term that they entered into those contracts betting on the come, so to speak. They knew that revenue was going to be generated. On the other hand, there were other staffing companies who looked at the Dun & Bradstreet and other types of credit checks and opted not to take the risk. And that's the way they looked at it. It's a risk analysis. It's a risk assessment.
That's
you just look at it and say, okay, what's our return on investment? Is this something that we want to do or is this something that we don't want to do? In the studio, we have Joe Thurman. Joe, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
And so, Joe, you have been in the IT staffing industry for how long? And give us kind of a little background on what you do in this industry.
Yeah, I've been in the technology staffing industry for just shy of about 8 years. Based here in Denver, working with everything from startups to the Fortune 500 from coast to coast. And, you know, I focus on driving new business, supporting those organizations with different staffing needs, working with them to address their business initiatives as they look to ramp up, you know, their workforce. Just as you mentioned here for the IRP 6, you know, they have certain projects and they look to leverage companies such as ourselves for their staffing needs. And so that's my day-to-day focus. and has been for the last 7.5 years.
And so, Joe, what is your job title exactly, just so people know where you're coming from?
Senior Director of Business Development.
Senior Director of Business Development. Okay, that's what I thought, but I just wanted to clarify that.
All right. Now.
Well, and I see here on your profile that it says that you manage contracts for, it looks like, at least 7 Fortune 500 companies.
Yeah. I mean, over the years, I've worked with Visa, FedEx, State Farm, a lot of the large telecom companies, a whole variety, insurance companies. So like I say, large and small, supported over the years.
So you run the gamut as far as the size of companies and their particular staffing needs.
Correct.
Okay. So, Cliff, you found an article that talked about startup companies and
yes,
staffing and so forth.
Yeah, this article is on allbusiness.com, and the title of it is How to Staff a Startup. And I found this article very interesting because the things that they say in this article is pretty much exactly what IRP Solutions did. This is what the IRP 6 did, you know, back in like 2001, 2002 time frame. And this article is basically telling you how to staff a startup. And it tells you, I mean, line for line, it says that you should develop relationships with contingency staffing firms to cover your various department needs. You should also plan to work with several contingency firms, most of which are very good at filling.
Now, let's stop right there.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the points that the assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch tried to say,
right,
was a negative and tried to use that as a basis for saying that they're just running a scam.
Right, because you use several staffing firms. I mean, Joe, you can speak to this in a minute, but you use several staffing firms, and this article speaks to it, because every firm doesn't do everything. Like Joe says, he's a technology specialist. You have other firms that may be, you know, executive placement specialists, people who have, you know, help desks and other things of that nature. And in this article, it says that most of these contingency firms that you should try to use, most of which are very good at filling certain types of positions but don't cover all types of jobs. For example, it's common for certain firms to be strong in technology or web development, but unable to fill positions in business development. Therefore, you need to identify recruiting firms that cover the functional areas you need to staff. Finally, you may wish to hire one or more contract recruiters, which handle recruiting, coordinated high-priority searches, and so forth. So that is the position that DKH Enterprises, and DKH Enterprises, which Demetrius Harper, one of the IRP 6, was the CEO, he took the position of
finding talent.
Right, of finding talent, handle recruiting, coordinated to high-profile talent to make sure that the people that we're bringing in, the people that are going to be temporarily staffed, are people that know what they're doing, that have the technology, that have the skill set, that have the background, that know about application software security and things of that nature that you would need to build a product such as the Silk software.
So, Joe, break it down for us. Is it reasonable for a staffing or for a startup company or even an existing company? Is it reasonable that, like Cliff was saying, you have various needs within a company, and if a company is going to use contingency firms as far as, you know, staffing companies, is it reasonable to say that they're just going to have one company in their stable?
No, we would love that. I mean, we'd love to monopolize every single client that we have, but it's a competitive, you know, market. It's extremely competitive, and one of the key things you keep saying is contingency. You know, that means you pay us based on performance. You don't pay us to leverage our service. But the key is, you know, it's smart business for you to leverage more than one. And even as Cliff said, you know, whether it's marketing or executive search or anything like that, within the same space of technology, if you create a competitive marketplace within your business, you're going to get better rates, you're going to get better performance, you're going to get better response times versus you giving someone, you know, exclusivity.
And better talent, I would assume.
We all have different ways that we go about doing what we do, so you're going to get different technology from all of us.
Yeah. So our number is 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620. In the studio with us is Joe Thurman. This evening, we're talking about the staffing industry and dispelling the myth, dispelling the lies that the federal government associated with the IRP 6. This is the Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. We will be right back after this.
Government targeted, prosecuted, convicted, six executives in, held back evidence,
come on.
Hundreds of pages of missing manuscripts, court circuit, 10th district denying the writ of mandamus, read RP6, critical rights violations, scandalous, their motivation to finish their business with major companies, the government, New York PD, DHS, potential customers,
come on.
Faith potential, obtain funding from banks and angel investors with no success, that calm melt down, finance skeptics, so they hire a staffing company to fill the gap with every attention to fulfill the contract, fill the deal when money come back. Everybody paid the bills, the wages, take care of all of that. No Friday, they got viable software, but you compare them to those with nothing to offer. Prosecuted by the attorney's office before the FBI gotta start investigating charges, skipping steps in the process, even barring the testimony of Andrew Alvarez, a witness who could tell why any staffing company that could do a Dunbar Street credit check would stick out their neck if there was no prospect they could collect. When they're reeling the net, it all relates to Harvey Silver's late statements about the vagueness of federal law, judicial chaos, A_JustCause. Read at RP6.org, 347-205-9620, just blog. It's just us, but we don't gotta just talk. We can just march to the courts for the cause with one voice. It's just free them all.
Come on.
That's Dallas Burgess in the Freak Anthem. Dallas now has 845 listens out on SoundCloud, and Dallas wrote that song specifically for the IRP6. And so, again, we always like to give a shout out to Dallas Burgess on that. That's a great, everyone likes that song, so we got to play it at least every week and tell folks go out there and listen to it. I know Dallas has to like the fact that those numbers keep running up. I mean, you got 845 listens on that. That's just phenomenal.
Go, Dallas.
Thanks again, Dallas. Hey, let's take a moment here. Our phone number, 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast. This evening we have Joseph Thurman in the studio with us, and we're talking about the staffing industry. Before we jump back into that conversation, Ethel, let's kind of remind folks as to how they can help the IRP6 and a Just Cause.
Absolutely. You can help us by reaching out to your local radio, television stations, and asking them why are they not covering the case of the IRP6, that are six wrongly convicted men sitting in a federal prison camp in Florence, Colorado, and over 200 pages of the federal trial transcript is missing. Contact them and ask them, why aren't you covering this?
That's right. And, also we have that petition out there on change.org, talking about that as well. Again, change.org. Go out there, do a search on the IRP6, sign that petition, Our research team is telling us that several folks have signed it just in this first segment of the program.
Wow, awesome.
And so the number is going up, and I'll still put it out there again. You know, as soon as you sign it, you know, jump in the chat room or call in and let us know why you signed it. No one's called in yet. No one's everybody's being shy.
Everybody's shy. You're out
there because we see you, and we see folks that are listening in online and have called in. And so they're saying quite a few folks have actually gone out there and signed in again or signed the petition because you can only sign it once. So one other thing, too, we put out a press release that's talking about that. And we got a press release out that will be coming out every week about the IRP6. So go to prweb.com, and do a search on the IRP6. Again, our phone. Go ahead, Evan.
No, I just wanted to make sure that people do not forget to continue to call Attorney General Eric Holder's office, 202-514-2003 or 2005, and ask him to investigate the case of the over 200 pages of federal child transcript that are missing in the case of the IRP6.
That's right. And the press release that we put out earlier this week was actually talking about a show that we were on with Dr. Wilmer Leon on Sirius XM Radio last weekend, and then Dr. Leon was on our program on Tuesday evening. And so, you know, there were some good comments that were made by our attorney, Mark Garagos, comments made by David Banks and Gary Walker. And so, again, go out and take a look at those. Okay, let's get back to this subject here. Joe, again, welcome to the program. We're talking about the staffing industry and how it applies to the IRP6 case. And we are dispelling the lies that Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch and FBI Agent John Smith.
Many lies.
Oh, yeah. They put these lies out there saying, you know, that IRP6 or that IRP Solutions was bilking staffing companies. And, you know, they found all kinds of reasons to try and say, you know, well, they did this and they did that. And when the bottom line is that everything was done according to the book. And as Joe just stated, you know, the way the industry is, it's very competitive. Mm-hmm. And so, Joe, during the break, we were talking a little bit about, you know, the way in which you vet a company before you engage them in business. So what kind of things does your company do before you actually sign a contract with them to provide staffing services?
Well, I mean, it's usually a pretty soft process. I mean, this is a cash flow business that we're in. Everyone's in it to make money. You know, it's a very, very large industry that we play in. And so a lot of times, I mean, it's you go off of industry knowledge, knowing if anyone's filed for bankruptcy, anything of that nature. You know, with startups, you look at any funds that they've raised, any cash flow that you think they potentially have that you can find, you know, just out in the public knowledge. You'll use Dun & Bradstreet just to verify you know, just like any other business, to check that they can, you know, pay their bills and you know, use that for your weighing your options of whether you're going to do business with them.
So let's stop right there. I mean, because that is a pivotal point right there from the standpoint of and it's throughout the IRP6 court transcript where it talked about how did you know, when I say you, different companies that IRP used, what did you do to determine whether or not to do business with IRP?
Right.
And, you know, the Dun & Bradstreet situation came up repeatedly. So, Joe, this is a decision, really, based on doing those background checks, whether or not your company wants to assume certain risks, because it's not upfront payment, is it?
No.
Or there are different types of contracts.
Well, there's different types of contracts you can arrange. Yeah, I mean, but, you know, the biggest thing is you know, I'm obviously familiar with this case and testified at trial in regard to how the staffing industry works.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the biggest thing is these companies knew based on just what you look and feel and what you see on the internet. That's what we do. You know, we go through, we see how large a company is. We see how many employees they have. And you kind of weigh that. And you know when you're working with a startup, just like anything else, that there's going to be some risk involved, just like when we work with big companies. I mean, staffing industry, I'm looking at a report just from Staffing Industry Analysts, which is one of the, you know, the main information gathering groups within our industry. And it just says the top 100 firms produce $70 billion $70 billion.
$70 billion.
Wow. Yeah, this is a cash flow business, and that's only the top 100 firms.
That's that's over half of the at least, and I might be looking at an older report from 2011 that says that, you know, there are 3 million people generating revenues of over $125 billion. In that industry.
Right. I mean, yeah, they only have 54% of the market share. So you look at that. So, yeah, they're doing $70 billion.
Yep.
And so but you look at that, you don't get there without taking risk, and you don't get there without hoping that, you know, the next startup that you jump in on is going to be the next Google or the next whatever that pops up in the technology industry.
And, you know, and I've often stated that because of that fact that you just stated, the competitiveness, and you never know if it's the next Google or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in a past life, I was in sales. Mm-hmm. And I often refer to this as a sales-motivated business. Mm-hmm. And you got folks out there on the street knocking on doors, going from business to business to business, trying to get them to do business. Right. And if you see a company that is very promising and you know that they're getting ready to make it big, you want to get your foot in the door with them because of the fact that not only are you doing business now, mm-hmm. but you are doing business or you're setting yourself up for follow-on business.
Right.
That takes me to my next point, Cliff. ETI.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Susan Holland, she made comments to Demetrius Harper, and she said that, you know, she saw it. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like you see the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
Right.
Here's a startup company. They have this startup company, IRP Solutions, being contacted by the Department of Homeland Security, not the other way around.
Right.
I mean, in any sales organization, you're out there beating the bushes,
right.
and you're, you know, doing your marketing thing. And Cliff, you and I, we were at IRP. Mm-hmm. I was the vice president of sales and marketing, so I was part of that equation as far as beating the bushes.
Right.
Well, you're contacting all of the law enforcement agencies across the country and saying, hey, look at what we have. We have something that is revolutionary. This is something that is answering the mail as far as the 9/11 commission report. Mm-hmm. This is something that, you know, law enforcement needs. And we went from one iteration to the other, from a desktop version to a client-server version to a web-enabled version, and doing everything possible to, you know, shift as the market shifted. When we got called by the Department of Homeland Security, that is different in a sales cycle.
Right.
You got a major, well, the most major agency in the nation.
That's
it's
true.
A new agency. At that time, they had very deep pockets.
Mm-hmm.
We get called by them. So Susan Holland at ETI, she sees this,
mm-hmm. right.
as well as a lot of the other ones. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, she's, you know, when you look at the emails that Susan Holland wrote to Demetrius, and you can see them out on freetheirp6.org, you see where she's making these statements telling Demetrius how, you know, you're going to be the next, you know, self-made millionaire in the, you know, Colorado greatest, this and this and that. All these wonderful accolades.
And you know what, Cliff? That's not just about her giving accolades to Demetrius.
Right.
This is about, I see you as being a self-made millionaire.
Right, and I see
and
me. I'm going to jump on that bandwagon.
Exactly.
And
he
ride it.
Still is.
Yeah, and I'm going to ride it all the way to the Department of Homeland Security,
mm-hmm.
and go in there with you. And she looked at, and she knew when she, I mean, she had been in business.
She
for
knew
years.
What the situation
she knew
was.
What was going on. That's why. She said, well, hey, I'll engage with you because, like Joe said, you see the promise. And I have the letter here from Andrew Alvarelli, who's he's the chief executive of another company in Denver, another staffing company called RemyCorp.
Now, Cliff, do me a favor. Read the letter, and then let's talk about what happened in trial when it
right,
came to
right,
Andrew.
Right, right, right. Yeah, and, you know, Andrew, he wrote this letter, and there's things in here. First, I want to go over what he put in as his credentials. He says, I've been in the staffing business for 15 years now, 12 of which as a Remy Corporation's principal executive officer. I've been the president of Staffing Industry User Group from 2002 through 2007, along with being co-president of Oracle Mountain States User Group from 2003 to 2008. I've been a finalist for Ernst & Young's Entrepreneur of the Year for 2003 and 2004, and I've been honorably discharged from the United States military. I've been a member of the Federal Bureau of Investigations, that's the FBI, their InfraGuard for almost 9 years, and have assisted the FBI in an investigation of a false network of candidates interviewing with staffing firms. So this man, Andrew Alvarelli, actually helps the FBI to do investigations of companies who are trying to rip off staffing firms. So he knows He knows what this looks like.
He knows when a fraud is going down.
Yeah, he knows when a fraud is going down. They call on him to help them to say, hey, we don't know what we're talking about as the FBI with these staffing firms. We need somebody who does.
So Andrew Alberelli, IRP Solutions, fraud, not fraud.
Right, exactly.
In the words of Andrew Alberelli.
Yeah, he says, I feel the majority of people are confused as to how staffing and recruiting firms actually operate and first wanted to take the time to perhaps explain our business and show you that what transpired in this case is normal operations in the staffing industry.
Normal operations.
Now, this man, and he wrote this in 2011, so now he's at the point of, you know, getting closer to 20 years in the industry, 15 years as the owner of a staffing company, and he's saying, hey, what these guys did, this is normal practice.
Normal
he also
practice.
States in his letter that in our due diligence of companies, we found that the term contract, which, you know, they tried to say, well, IRP said they had a contract with Department of Homeland Security. And like you said, these witnesses were impeached. It was found that they were lying in their testimony.
Mm-hmm.
And the IRP 6 basically caught them lying in court, and they had to back down off of it. Otherwise, you know, they would have been basically liable for being charged with perjury on the stand. And so he's saying that we found the term contract has little to no bearing on whether we engage with that company or not. And like Joe said, Andrew's saying the same thing. We base our decision to engage with a company on its creditworthiness, cash flow, or product that they are developing.
So, Joe, if you see or hear of a new company or you get a lead, you know, through one of the networking groups or what have you, and you find out, hey, this company is brand new. They, you know, they got a patent on this new widget, and they look like they're getting ready to get a contract with the federal government to deliver this widget to the Army. Does that really play? I mean, how much of a role does that play?
That plays a huge role. I mean, you want to be the first one there. You want to build the relationship. You want to build the trust. You want to be the one they come to, you know, for their staffing needs, without question.
And but then that's just part of the equation. You do your other due diligence as far as looking at the Dun & Bradstreet and all this other kind of stuff. And then you guys, I guess, in a conference room somewhere, you make a conscious decision, hey, we're either going to go after this or we're not.
It really depends on the firm. I mean, on how that decision is made. In smaller firms, you know, an account manager can make that decision. And, you know, they're gung-ho. They're trying to make their money. They're trying to make their commission.
Exactly.
And, you know,
hold on, say that again. I talked over you right there. They're trying to make that what?
They're trying to make their commission.
There you go.
I mean, a lot of people, you know, to Mr. Alberelli's point, people don't understand how our industry works. And that's one thing that really bugs me about this case. It's easy to make it sound criminal, what we do in our industry, right? I sit in the middle while one guy gets paid $80 an hour. We bill somebody $120 an hour, and I don't do anything, but I make $30 an hour. Right. I mean,
and all you did was say, hey, this is Jim. This is John.
Right.
John, this is Jim. Do you guys like each other? Oh, good. OK, Jim, you're going to work for John tomorrow.
Exactly.
And I'm going to get paid for just introducing you guys. I mean, that's the most simplistic way of putting it.
Correct.
And then somewhere later on down the line, Jim is going to say, OK, Joe, thanks for introducing this guy to us. And so here's what we owe you. So
right. Yeah. I mean, it's just like it's capital investment from a business. It's just like paying their utility bill. They pay us just like they pay some other bill.
Now, before we gloss over this situation with Andrew Alberelli, what happened in the courtroom, Cliff?
Yeah, Andrew.
I mean, Andrew is clearly an expert.
Right. And he called. He sent this letter to the U.S. Attorney's Office, and he was one of the expert witnesses, or slated to be one of the expert witnesses for the IRP 6 for their defense. When Andrew gets on the stand and his name is read, the prosecution objects to him being an expert witness. Now, their reason for objecting is saying they weren't informed that he was going to be an expert witness.
No, they just got caught with their pants down.
Yeah, and basically that's what happened. They got caught because Andrew sent this letter in July of 2000.
And Andrew was going to expose them
right,
for the
and
lies
Andrew
that they were telling.
Was going to basically say in open court, these staffing companies knew exactly what they were getting into. This letter went in months before the case happened, months before trial, rather. Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch knew about Andrew Alberelli. He had this letter in hand in the courtroom, and when he objected to Andrew being an expert witness, Judge Christine Arguello basically concurred with his objection. And And talking to other, law professionals, lawyers, even Mark Garrett was saying, this guy, as an expert witness, he should have been allowed to testify.
And how much revenue again did Andrews?
About $300 million.
$300 million.
Yes. And so this guy, his credibility is outstanding. And you know, we had our lawyer friend on the East Coast. He said, at the very least, the judge should have said, okay, we're going to take a recess. You guys are going to sit Andrew Alvarelli down in front of me. You're basically going to bet him here and now, and he should be allowed to work. You know, she wasn't playing. She was working for the other side.
Absolutely.
And basically told him, you're dismissed. I'm not going to allow you to testify. Neither did she allow Kelly Balcom to testify, who was the other expert.
Hey, on the other side of the break, we're going to come back and talk a little bit more with Joe Thurman, talking about the staffing industry and how it applies to the IRP 6 case. When we first come back, we're going to have Mark Clements for our exoneree moment, a Just Cause Coast to Coast. We'll be right back after this.
Oh,
Opponent will be all over with Tiffany Stewart and Cole Stewart. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. That song was written by your son, Cole, Cliff.
Yes, at 12 years old, he wrote that. So it shows the impact of, you know, what things like this can do to a family, the extended family, and everything. And that, and his cousin, Tiffany Stewart, Clint, my brother, his or who is one of the IRP6, his daughter, Tiffany, she's the one who composed it and sang it.
Beautiful yeah. song. Yeah, beautiful.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that one is posted out on our website as well, so folks can go out there and listen to it. Our number is 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620. This evening we're talking about the staffing industry and how it applies to the IRP6 case, and we're dispelling the lies and the myths that the government were telling against IRP6. And we know there are folks out there listening, and you know, someone knows somebody out there, Ethel, who can help to push this story, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And you know, one of the things, too, and we've been at the top of the show, and then we put it in there about midway through, mm-hmm. Where we were talking about, you know, folks signing that petition out there on change.org. Man, that number is going up, you know, by the minutes. And so it's doing very, very well. We appreciate that. I'm going to say it again. You know, as you are listening, and when you hear me say, you know, go out there to change.org and do a search on IRP6, sign that petition, go ahead and do it. I mean, I didn't think we were going to get that kind of response.
Well, you know what? Somebody knows that this could happen to them, too.
Oh, man. Right. It's like every 2 minutes, I think, the way it's calculating out, every 2 minutes it looks like we're getting a new signature, which ain't bad.
And you guys, call in. Let us know who you are that are signing it, you know, so everybody knows Sam's is not talking off the top of his head. Call up. Talk to us about it.
Hey, what are you trying to say? Hey, okay, let's go to our exoneree moment, and Joe, we'll be coming back to you here in about 10 minutes to continue our conversation about the staffing industry. We got a lot to cover on that. So for our exoneree moment this evening, we have Mark Clements. Mark, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am, and good evening to the radio listeners and to those that are in the studio.
Hey, Mark. Hey, good to hear from you. So, Mark, I'm reading your story here, and it says that you spent 28 years in prison in Illinois, and this is after being tortured and abused and forced by a detective does it say that you were coerced into a confession? Tell your story here for us.
Well, I was 16 years of age. I was growing up then on the south side of Chicago. A fire occurred on the south side of Chicago, which 4 people died being taken to the police station, I would say 8 days later in 1981. I was taken to Area 3 Violent Crimes, where I was beat in my body and my genital areas was grabbed in squares, not once, but on 2 different separate occasions as a kid, deprived of all meaningful access to a telephone, to a youth officer, and just basically at the mercy of police, you know, at the age of 16 years of age. I was given a spoon-fed confession. That means the details is basically told to me by the police, in which, therefore, I repeat to a assistant Cook County State's attorney, and therefore I spent 28 years of my life serving 4 natural life sentences plus 30 years before it was overturned in August of 2009.
And, you know,
wow.
Mark, this is – every time
it's
we
terrible,
hear these
man.
Stories,
it's
terrible, and they all have this common thing about them. They get these – you know, teenagers, underage, and don't even have your parents with you, and then get you to coerce you or beat you into a, you know, into saying that you're the one who did it, and then lock you up for life, and then say, oh, we called our man. You didn't catch anybody. You beat me into a false confession, a 16-year-old kid. And where did they even notify your parents that they had you under arrest?
And oh, go ahead.
No, and therefore they also testified to that fact in open court. You know, I do follow and I do work with cases within the criminal justice system. And, you know, one thing that must change is that the people that are under the sound of my voice, they must move and they must put pressure on their legislators to enact more accountability towards police officers that abuse its powers and at least failing to notify the parents once a juvenile suspect is held in custody.
There you go.
And you know, I think also, Mark, they need to get rid of this confession crap.
Oh, you know, especially like Cliff said, with teens,
you know
young
absolutely.
Kids.
Anytime you hear the word confession, somebody needs to say investigation.
That's
well,
the
let me tell you, the bottom line of it is, and I'm not meaning to cut anyone off, but the bottom line of it is this. Once confessions is given and it's upheld by our Supreme Court of a totality clause, that means that they must consider your age, whether you went to school, they must consider if you use drugs and so on and so forth. Well, the totality clause makes no common sense when the state of Illinois has been deemed as the false confession capital in the U.S. We have been faced with the most wrongful convictions than any state in America, and what really bothers me is that this is a pawn for attorneys, because what they do is they reach settlements in these cases without taking these cases through the full course of the legal system to draw some type of teeth. And without teeth, then you are only leaving your children to be victimized.
Yeah.
Now, Mark, I'm reading here, and this right here has just got chills going up my arms, and it says here that you were forced to accept 28 years in exchange to be with your dying mother.
Yes.
Was that a bargain?
My mother.
Man,
that was a bargain. Yes, that's what I received. And sad to say, if not, then therefore, I would have been probably still in prison. My mother would be dead because she did die 2 years later. But, you know, by the grace of God that I was able to make it to tell my story and to be an advocate to work for other individuals that are still stuck behind the prison walls now today, because there are so many young people that have been placed on death row in places like Texas and places like California, and people seem to let this stuff go under the radar, and the reason why is because it's many of us against it. We don't have unity.
And you know, Mark, and that's why we have this segment on this program, is because of the fact that we know that there are, you know, hundreds of Mark Clements out there in this country. Those that have both been exonerated as well as those who are yet to be exonerated.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that we will continue to talk about stories like yours. And I mean, because this is talk about a travesty of justice. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, I was also reading the article about a gentleman named Stanley Rice, who was wrongfully convicted.
That's my friend. That was my cellmate.
Oh, my gosh. Is that right?
And I fought like a dog to get him out of prison. Yes.
Wow.
Well, he was your cellmate, and he was also wrongfully convicted.
Yeah, subjected by the same man, beaten by the same man.
The same cops who tortured him tortured me.
Now, let me ask you something, Mark. Is that not a basis, is that not grounds for the state of Illinois, the attorney general in Illinois, to review every single case that this man had a conviction under? Is anything like that going on?
No, but by the grace of God, we do have very great attorneys who are trying to force them to do what you are saying, and that is under the People's Law Office, Flint Keller and Joey Mobile. But the bottom line of the entire root of injustice within our criminal justice system, it must start with accountability upon our elected officials that are appointing these police chiefs and that is assigning these crooked cops to these positions that they have. And until we vote them out, we're going to suffer.
And you know, they were saying here that no Chicago police officers were ever convicted of torturing suspects. But the guy Birch, he's serving 4.5-year sentence for perjury and obstruction of justice for lying on a civil suit.
Oh, so Birch is in prison.
He's for lying on a civil suit. Nothing to do with
he
torturing.
He will be released February the 14th.
Wow.
While his victims are still in prison, I work for many of them to try to free them out of prison now today. It's just unfortunately that we have such of a corrupt system that do not care because these bills, meaning these lawsuits, are coming out of taxpayer dollars and not out of their own pockets.
So, Mark, it sounds like you are, like, out there in the trenches on this thing. How can the listeners help you to get the word out there? Do you have any petitions or anything going? I know you were talking about some lawsuits that are going. How can folks get in contact with you? How can they also help you and your cause? Because, you know, this is crazy. I apologize. I didn't realize that Mr. Rice – was in the same predicament as you and that he was your cellmate.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's like what, I don't even know what that statistic is, but that's a bad statistic.
Yeah,
that's
real bad. Like we both sort of bust cop and end up in the same cell.
So how can folks help, Mark?
Well, they can get involved with the campaign to end the death penalty. They can go to nodeathpenalty.org. Or they can get involved with Chicago Alliance Against Racist and Political Repression in Chicago, and they can go to naarpr.org, or they can just simply, many of the listeners here, they already know who I am. Trust me, if they're on Facebook, they know who Mark Clements is. They can go on Facebook. They can track down Mark Clements that way, or they can go to Twitter, and they can track down Mark Clements Prisoner Speaks. And they are more than welcome to contact me, or they can contact me at my office, which is 312-939-2750. And quickly,
hey, Mark,
in the state
Mark
of,
say that phone number one more time.
It's 312-939-2750. And quickly, what I would like is the radio listeners in Texas, and you may have a lot of them because I asked many of them to listen tonight. I'm asking for us just once to come together in unity and to let's turn Texas into a national agenda to get rid of the death penalty. Had I been one year older, I would have been on death row. I would be dead. And many of you who are listening, where that I'm working night and day, working for your loved ones, I would not have had that opportunity. We must get involved, stop this madness. These young kids out here, we know that all the social services has been cut, but we got to nickel and dime and bring something together, or else they're all going to be 6 feet under or in someone's prison.
Yes.
Yeah,
so if callers, if you not if you, we're going to say help Mark out in this effort, and you can reach Mark at mark@nodeathpenalty.org, mark@nodeathpenalty.org. You can go to the website www.nodeathpenalty.org. And Mark, the organization is Chicago Alliance Against Racist and political repression.
Political repression and the campaign to end the death penalty, which is a national base organization.
Okay, Mark, your closing thoughts here. We got to go to a break. Give us some closing thoughts, and then we're going to go ahead.
Okay, closing thoughts is this. Mothers and fathers, girlfriends and wives, take a hard look. Understand that as a child you was told nothing from nothing leaves nothing. If you let me come up and smack you on the street and you do nothing, think about that. We must come together in unity and put an end to this madness. I paid 28 years of my life in sacrifice so that your children can have justice. If you don't listen to me, if you don't listen to the Central Park Five, if you don't fight for the brother Rodney Reed and Rob Will on Texas death row, you will not stand for anything. We must fight this system with teeth and nail. Thank you.
All right, Mark. Mark Clements, thank you for calling in, sir. Much honor and love to you and your family, and thank you for what you're doing out there.
Absolutely.
That's Mark Clements on our Exonery Moment.
Thank you.
Check him out. You can also check out Mark's story out on our website on AJCRadio.com, AJCRadio.com. Hey, callers, our number is 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620. And folks, you're really responding to this call to sign on that petition, and that's why I know you're going to help Mark as well. We have gotten, and this was just a couple minutes ago, they told me we got 10 more signatures on the petition. So you guys are doing a great job. We'll be right back after this.
Okay to drive.
Yeah, I'm fine.
You sure?
Relax.
What's a few beers?
If you don't stop your friend from drinking and driving, you're as good as dead. Drinking and driving can kill a friendship.
I'm a mother.
I'm a father.
I'm a sister.
A registered nurse.
I serve my country in the United States military.
I'm your neighbor.
I sit next to you at church.
And my child was
arrested,
held in custody,
questioned without my knowledge,
exposed to violence,
witnessed to rape,
placed in solitary confinement,
unable to call or see me,
shackled to a wall,
beaten,
sentenced as an adult at age 17,
sentenced as an adult at age 16,
sentenced as an adult at age 15.
We felt lost,
isolated,
ostracized,
misjudged,
terrified.
And in the absence of all hope, my child took his own life.
And then I found the Alliance for Youth Justice.
They gave me the support and resources to get through one of the most difficult times in my life.
Now I know I'm not alone.
And neither are you.
Now we have a voice.
Now we have power.
In numbers.
In numbers.
In numbers.
We can make a difference.
There are approximately 2 million children in the juvenile and criminal justice system in this country. These are the faces of those families. If you are the family member of a child who has been in the justice system, or if you are someone who supports this movement and is ready to make a difference, visit the Campaign for Youth Justice at www.campaignforyouthjustice.org.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
And what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
Do something good for your community.
Reuse bags and bottles and always recycle.
Help us collect 1 million pounds of food.
Help people prepare for natural disasters.
Do something about homelessness.
Anyone could be a rock star in their community.
So then do
something. Do something.
Do something.
Do something.
Visit dosomething.org to find out how.
I can solve difficult problems for a Fortune 500 company.
I can run a successful business.
I can manage your home improvements.
I can publicize your message.
I can motivate your audience.
I can put my military experience to work for your company.
I can teach your children.
I can boost your bottom line.
I can add value to your workplace.
I could be a loyal and productive employee.
But I can't put my skills to work for your organization
if I'm not given the opportunity.
If you don't recognize my talents and ability.
If you don't hire me.
If you don't have an open mind and a workplace that's open to everyone.
If you don't realize that America works best when everybody works.
What can you do?
What can you do?
What can you do?
You can remember that it works.
It's what people can do.
It's what people can do that matters.
Nearly 50 million Americans have disabilities. Capitalize on their talents with employment practices that benefit everyone. Learn more at whatcanyoudocampaign.org.
You are listening to AJC Radio.
Awareness and information about judicial injustice. Our number this evening is 347-205-9620. 347-205-9620. Man, that was an incredible story that Mark was sharing with us there. I mean, that is just crazy. And you know, we hear from week to week to week during our exoneree moment. And all of these stories are unique. I mean, there is a common thread in the sense that there is injustice, there's wrongful convictions, there's all kinds of stuff people are doing just to get a conviction.
Absolutely.
And you know, some of the things that Mark is doing is just it's great that he's out there working. So that's why we want to push folks to assist. Again, if you want to reach Mark Clements, that's at mark@nodeathpenalty.org, nodeathpenalty.org. And the organization is Chicago Alliance Against Racist and Political Repression. I mean, that's just some crazy stuff there.
Yeah, and to find an article with his roommate that, you know, didn't even realize that. That is awesome. You know, talking about his roommate that went through the exact same thing.
That is just crazy.
That's awesome.
And you know, again, we want to put that call out there for the petition for the IRP6 on change.org. Go out there, do a search on IRP6, sign that petition. Because, you know, there are 200 pages of transcript that's missing. It's there. It was omitted.
Withheld.
Yeah, it was withheld, omitted by Judge Christine Arguello, as well as court reporter Darlene Martinez. And we're going to continue to talk about it because that is a key point in the appeal for the IRP6.
Hey, Sam.
Yes, ma'am.
Let me fix something. When I said his roommate... I sound like they were living in a dormitory or something. Let's go back. His cellmate.
I started to say something else.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Else, but,
I had
you know,
to fix that one.
Yeah, and you know, because it's definitely not glorious at all.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and on the petition for IRP6, change.org, that 200 pages missing transcript, Attorney General Eric Holder has to move on this. He needs to investigate this, and as we were talking at the top of the show, and as Jay Arrington was talking about as well, you know, it's not that he... it's not within his power. He's just not doing it.
That's it.
But, you know, just before the break, I said, you know, that we had gotten 10 additional signatures. Right after that, when we went to break, our control room folks said, okay, you know, four more people or five more people had signed, you know, just within that 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we know that this thing works. And, again, I'm going to put the invitation out there. The invitation out there. Hey, guys, you know, you can call in. Let us know why you're signing. I mean, we know what the motivation is, and like we talk about all the time, this thing can show up on your doorstep at any time. And as Mark was just saying, it's like we got to hold people accountable.
Yeah.
We have to hold judges accountable, prosecutors accountable. In this situation with the IRP6, we need to hold court reporters accountable.
That's right.
Ethel, what else can folks do to help out the IRP6?
You know, hold them all accountable. Call Eric Holder's office. Call him at 202-514-2003 or 2005 and tell him you're holding him accountable for not taking action on these missing transcripts. What's wrong with him?
Something has to be done.
And also, people, reach out to your local TV and radio stations and ask them, hey, why hasn't this thing been talked about? Why hasn't this case with the IRP6 and this over 200 pages of missing federal trial transcript, why hasn't that been talked about?
That's right. And Cliff, folks who got a platform and a high-profile position, what can they do to help us out?
Yeah, we just want you to know
or want to ask you that if you do have a platform on the national level, if you know someone who has a platform on the national level, tell them to reach out to us, to get in touch with us, Facebook, Twitter, email, telephone number. Reach out to us. We need to get the word spread. You know, like Sam said, people are signing the petition. We know that you're out there listening. You know, if you have connections with people, let them know as well. Tell them what it's about. I mean, the fact that over 200 pages of transcript is missing, that is atrocious, and that affects all of us, because if we don't get this judge and this court reporter to deliver those, that means that if it comes down to you, your family, your friends, your loved ones, that they can do the same thing to you and are going to get away with it.
That's
so
right.
Reach out to everybody that you know and let them know that we're out here fighting.
And with 200 pages, over 200 pages missing with the IRP 6 case, hey, who knows? When your case comes up, it may be the whole transcript.
And, you know, Mark Garrigo said in the interview, and Cliff, you're talking about folks with a national platform. We got to give a shout-out again to Dr. Wilmer Leon of SiriusXM Radio Channel 110, Inside the Issues with Dr. Wilmer Leon. It comes on Saturdays there on SiriusXM Radio. Dr. Leon had us on his program last Saturday, and he was on our program on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And during the interview on Dr. Leon's show last Saturday, Mark Garrigo said what? In 31 years.
That he had never seen in a case where the transcript, there's over 200 pages of a transcript missing. He said he's never seen that. Mm. And, you know, Mark Garrigo has been in all kind of cases, you know, federal, civil, anything you can think of. And for when he said that, you know, it was kind of shocking, because you look at it and you say, okay, this is a person that, you know, he's nationally known, probably internationally known.
International,
I'm sure.
Yep.
And for him to say, you know, he's never seen it in 31 years of practice where there's a transcript missing. And the other part of that issue is that when a transcript is missing, if a defendant does not have the right to put on a proper appeal because their transcript is missing, that's something that is just thrown out. It's like, okay, the transcript is missing, I can't put on a proper appeal, the court's going to have to bite it and let them out. And these guys, the IRP 6, have been in prison for
16 months,
mm-hmm. and the transcript is missing. How is that? And
how is that?
Like Dr. Leon was saying, how is it that Eric Holder hasn't picked up the phone and asked some questions about it?
And why are the guys not out at least on bond pending appeal?
Right, you know, until that issue gets dealt with.
Exactly.
That's right.
And, you know, I got to go back to our conservative champions commentary that we did earlier in the program, and we were talking about the congressional conservatives leading on prison reform. Mm-hmm. You know, there are folks out there, and we talked about it the other day. You know, I'm sure, well, even like in this case where Rand Paul is working with Patrick Leahy on the on a bill to give the judges a little, you know, what they call a safety valve.
Yeah.
You know, there are other conservatives as well as liberals out there who have some say in this kind of thing. You know, and at this point, it seems like, though, you know, we're getting a lot, I mean, tremendous support from the conservatives on this issue. And so, you know, if anyone even knows, like, Rush Limbaugh, you know, or somebody mm-hmm. like that, you know, talk about a national platform. I mean, Rush would just eat this up.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
you know, this is something that needs to be addressed on a national level. Our number this evening, 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620. Man, look at that clock. It is just working against us. In the studio this evening, we have Joseph Thurman. And we're talking about the staffing industry and how it applies in the IRP 6 case, because of the fact that, you know, that was the foundation of their case, saying, you know, that IRP Solutions was bilking staffing companies. Well, we are dispelling that, and we're just dispelling the lies and the myths as to, you know, what was going on there. Now, they fooled the jury in this case. Mm-hmm. And as you talked about in the previous segment, Cliff, you know, we had an expert witness, Andrew Alberelli, is the CEO of a successful staffing company in the Denver market, and he was going to be on the stand as an expert witness. Judge Arguello would not allow him to testify upon the objection of Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch. And also, Alberelli submitted a letter showing his credentials. He submitted a letter that talked about how the staffing industry works. And so, you know, this evening, Joe is in the studio with us, Joe Thurman, and he's talking about it. He's shared, given a lot of insight as to how staffing companies make the decision to do business with how staffing companies decide to do business with client companies, so to speak.
Right.
And
right.
then, you know, one other thing, and as we saw in the transcript too, they made an issue of folks working multiple contracts. And, you know, that's something that we want to address. You know, when you have a consultant, so to speak, someone who has been placed by a staffing company at a client company, you know, what is what's the deal as far as folks working multiple contracts?
Right. And Andrew's letter, you know, he addressed that as well. He said that, quoting him, also, it is a common practice for contractors to simultaneously work multiple contracts and charge the contracting company full-time hours weekly. This often occurs with full knowledge or even encouragement by the staffing company. And when he's saying work for contractors to simultaneously work multiple contracts, in the technical field, you can work.
You can do it.
I mean, you can work 2-3 jobs at one time. I've done it myself. I know several people who have done it where you can, I mean, in the virtual world that we live in, you can have 2-3 computers sitting in front of you and you can be working on several of them. I'm a database developer. I can be coding for one company and also coding for another one at the same time.
So Cliff, is it fair to say that at this point as a consultant, you're not being paid per se, you know, based on, your hourly engagement, you're being paid for your expertise.
Right. You're
I mean,
being
if
paid,
you're babysitting systems
right,
or whatever.
You're being paid just like, you know, I made the analogy before. It's just like a babysitter. If you have a babysitter, you know, this person is watching 5 kids at once. Mm-hmm. You're not going to tell that babysitter, well, because you got 5 kids there, you can't charge 5 people a rate for watching their kid because you can only watch one at a time. That's not true. I can change a diaper, feed and burp, put one of them, you know, in bed to go to sleep. I can watch these 5 kids at once and charge each parent for the whole, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours, however long that I babysit.
And they're still getting paid when that
right.
baby is asleep.
Exactly. They're getting paid when the baby's asleep. It's for the fact that they are there as basically guarding over that baby, watching it, making sure it's okay. It's the same way with systems. If I am maintaining a system, I'm administering it, I'm making sure it's up and running, and I'm coding on another system, I can get paid for both of those jobs at the same time. And that is what Andrew addressed. That's in his letter, and that's what he was going to address, you know, on the stand. And, you know, that was the thing that Matthew Kirsch, like, we don't want him to address this because it basically – makes our case come crumbling down. And Joe Thurman in the studio with us, he's a senior director of business development for, you know, those of you who may have tuned in late.
Mm-hmm.
Joe's a senior director of business development, and he's been in the industry for, what did you say, Joe, almost 10 years now?
Almost 8.
Almost eight years. And so in your time in the industry, tell us about your experience with this.
I mean, no, that's a great point, Cliff. I mean, it's just like babysitting. I mean, that's the best way to put it in layman's terms. I mean, you're being paid for your expertise, for being able to do things that, you know, myself and others can't do. The thing that people don't understand is, you know, the banking industry or anyone in a multitude of industries, they pay to have people who know how to keep their systems up.
Right.
You know, because if a system goes down, I mean, think of just your online banking or CNN.com.
Oh, man.
If that goes down, they're losing millions of dollars, you know, in a very short period of time. So that there's a person sitting there making sure that doesn't go down. And you don't get paid per keystroke or anything like that. You get paid, you know,
to sit there.
To sit
right.
there, basically.
Yeah.
And it goes back to, you know, something I said earlier. It's easy to make this high-paying, you know, high-revenue industry sound like something that someone's doing wrong. You know, to say this person sits there and gets paid to watch a computer, but that's exactly
right.
what
if
happens.
If that's my job, if that's what I do, that's what
I
do.
And, you know, Cliff, I think that's where the prosecution took advantage of the jury in the IRP 6 case. When you walk into a courtroom and you're talking about guys that are used to commanding hourly pay of in excess of $100 an hour, and you know you got someone sitting on the jury, supposedly a jury of your peers, mm-hmm. but you got this person who is making minimum wage, you know, and whatever minimum wage is, or let's just say someone's making $10 an hour, and then you got and they're sitting on the jury, and you got this prosecutor is trying to paint this image of this person who is being accused of doing wrong, you're saying, hey, this guy, you know, he's charging this company $100 an hour. And it's like, okay, if you're not used to those
right,
kind of numbers,
exactly.
It's like, oh, yeah, this guy had to have done something. And I got to go back to the situation with Lamont Banks when he said, you know, his lawyer went in as they had the jury pool, and he said to the jury pool, how many people in this room think that because Mr. Banks is sitting in the defendant's chair, he did something wrong? And 60 people, hands go up.
That's amazing.
A prosecutor can bring a pull the wool over a jury who is not used to the IT industry. They don't know how it works. They don't understand the concepts that you're talking about, Cliff, or that you're talking about, Joe. You know, we're going to talk more about this when we come back from this break. Hey, and listeners, if there's anyone out there that works in the IT industry and who has had multiple contracts, we want to hear from you. We're going to take those calls when we come back. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast. Our number is 347-205-9620. 347-205-9620. A Just Cause Coast to Coast. We'll be right back.
Hey, we've had some break-ins in my neighborhood, and there's a real suspicious guy. He looks black.
Did you see what he was wearing?
A dark hoodie, like a gray hoodie.
I think the hoodie is as much responsible for Trayvon Martin's death as George Zimmerman was.
Do I look suspicious?
Do I look suspicious?
Suspicious.
This guy looks like he's up to no good, or he's on drugs or something. It's raining and he's just walking around looking about.
Are you following him?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need you to do that.
You have to recognize that this whole stylizing yourself as a gangster, you're going to be a gangster wannabe. Well, people are going to perceive you as a menace.
I am here to continue the research to fight camp.
To protect my children, my grandchildren, to fight for justice,
to write the next great American movie,
to give a voice.
I am Trayvon Martin.
We are Trayvon Martin.
It's time to wake up. This can happen again.
Today, innocent Americans are standing trial for crimes they didn't commit. Today, innocent Americans are writing for help from a prison cell. Today, hundreds of Americans have been exonerated of crimes they didn't commit. Researchers believe that at least 40,000 innocent Americans still sit behind bars. For them, the answers do not come easy. A Just Cause seeks true balance and accountability in the judicial process, ensuring that innocent men and women are not convicted and sentenced to prison for trivial, obscure acts that are otherwise not seen as crimes. For more information on how A Just Cause may help you or how you can get involved to stop overcriminalization of innocent Americans, visit www.a-justcause.com or call 855-529-4252. That's 855-529-4252.
A Thus, Coach to Coach wanted to bring you educational awareness and information about judicial injustice. Our number is 347-205-9620. 347-205-9620. Oh, God. Folks, Ethel is, she's just doing having some classic moments here in the studio with us. And so, at any rate, our number, 347-205. Yeah, there you go, Ethel. Tonight in the studio, we have Joe Thurman, and we're talking about the staffing industry and how it applies to the IRP 6 case. And we've dispelled a lot of the things that the prosecution talked about in their case. And just before that break, we put a call out to have folks call in if they are contractors or have worked in the contracting industry. And so we got a few minutes left. We're going to try and take a couple of calls here. Who's on the phones, Cliff?
Hey, we got Michelle. Michelle, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thanks for calling in. What is your question or comment? You do work as a contractor, right?
Yes, I've basically done contract work for maybe 8 to 10 years, and it's very common in the industry for people who work multiple full-time positions. I've done it for at least 8 to 10 years myself. I usually always have two jobs at the same time. I've done as many as three.
Wow.
And so I'm actually surprised. And when I've talked to people, just people that are not in the IT field, they wonder, how do you handle it? And the fact is I thought it was an excellent analogy about being a babysitter, because you are not you can watch multiple things. You got one that's acting up. You deal with that. You put out a fire, and you go to the next one. And so it's common. I mean, I'm surprised that they did not allow that type of information in trial, because if you ask almost any IT person, they've heard of it or done it themselves.
Well, you know, they didn't allow it in trial because of the fact that they wanted to paint this picture that the IRP 6 had done something wrong. When, as we've talked about tonight, you know, everything they did was consistent with the industry. Michelle, thanks for that call, and so that's a good example of one person that works in the industry and has done it for a while and is able to do it. And if you're not doing your job, I would suspect you're going to get fired. You know,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying? So
yeah, it's about you. You know, if the client is happy, and I've been a contractor for almost 20 years now, if the client is happy, then you're doing your job. And if you're doing your job, then, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. People moonlight all the time. You cannot tell a babysitter you can only babysit one kid, otherwise you're ripping somebody off. That is ridiculous.
And, you know, Cliff, I got to go back to something that Joe was saying too, or actually something that happened in trial. You know, the transcript says that, or shows where the prosecutor asked a couple of these folks in that worked for a couple of staffing companies, if you had known that some of the people working at IRP were working a couple of different contracts or had a couple of different agencies or whatever, would you have kept them on? And they're sitting there lying, saying, no, if we had known that, we would not have allowed that. That's a straight-up lie. I mean, because, in fact, it goes back to what Joe said. It's all about getting paid commission.
Right.
And as long as you are doing what I placed you at that company to do, mm-hmm. and as long as the client company is not complaining to me as the person who
exactly.
placed you there, I'm going to allow you to stay there because I am getting paid commissions. This is all about revenue all across the board, mm-hmm. and people are not getting ready to turn away dollars. Cliff, who's on the phone?
We have an anonymous caller from 303, first three digits, 489. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, what's your comment?
Well, I have to say that it is true that there are lots of people that work multiple jobs at one time. That's technical, you know. That's the industry. And for them, I think it's a shame that they did not let that guy testify, because it would have proven that, you know, that these guys are innocent, you know?
Do you personally, I mean, are you a contractor? Have you worked multiple positions in the past or currently?
Yes, I have. And I continually do it. I've been doing it for years. And, I mean, that's life. That's the industry.
Right, exactly. And you know, that's two people already who have called in and said, you know, hey, bottom line is how you pay your bills.
That's right.
And I know when I've done it in the past, you know, one position, it might not pay all your bills.
That's
it
right.
It might not be enough. Just like any other person that would get, you know, that would hold down two jobs. It's a job. You know, you got to do what you got
to
do to pay the bills.
And like Joe said, it's a competitive industry. And I would like to say it's competitive from the staffing company side of it as well as from the consultant side. Would you agree, Joe? I mean, if you submit your resume, if someone submits their resume to you and they have all of the qualifications that a client company is looking for, you're going to put that person out there, right?
Right. Yeah, we're going to put them in. And I mean, like Cliff was saying, as long as you're doing your job and you're doing what we need our client, you're doing what our client needs you to do, then there's no issue. I mean, of course, we're going to say, well, if you do have a second gig, or is that going to impact your workload or anything of that nature? But it's standard that we see people working multiple engagements. We'll put people on multiple engagements.
And, you know, I think one thing too, Cliff, you know, we talk about it and, you know, we're talking about it with Joe because of the fact we understand the industry. And obviously
right.
some of the folks who are calling in understand the industry.
Mm-hmm.
But those who don't understand the industry, we need to qualify something. There's this thing called remote.
Yeah, exactly.
And the remote opportunities, or you may see the term telecommute.
Telecommute,
so
remote, VPN.
There you go.
Go to my PC. All these
all
things. These are ways
that
to make it possible that you can work multiple positions at the same time.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things is that, you know, now everybody knows how to go out on monster.com or dice.com or something like that. Folks out there who are listening, if you don't understand what we're talking about when we talk about telecommuting and remote and so forth, just log in to Monster or log in to Dice or whatever platform that you use as far as looking for a job. In that little search window, type in the word telecommute, and you'll understand what we're talking about. There will be a lot of jobs that pop up there. Telecommute basically means you work from home. And if you're working from home, you can do multiple gigs, and you don't have to even be working from home. Let's take another call at Cliff.
Okay, we have William. William, are you there?
I'm here.
Can you hear me? Yes, we got you.
All right. I just had a brief comment, and I've been listening and following, you know, this case, and what you guys are bringing to light is so important, and it sounds like the jury was not able to understand the industry. You know, myself, I've been a consultant, and for 12, 13 years. I've worked multiple assignments, worked for two different contracts, and sometimes three different contracts. And that is something that is very much commonplace. I mean, that is something that the staffing industry encourages, you know, for you to be someone that is billable, you know, and the point that you brought up, they want to make money off of you. That's the bottom line. So
right.
if they can sell you out to two or three different companies and sell your skills, they're going to do it. So that I'm glad that you're bringing this up and shining this light so people understand the industry. But another thing that I want just to throw out here real quick, large corporations use many staffing firms. They will use a lot of staffing firms. And so they're not just going to go and use one to find the people that they need. It's not unheard of, and I'm sure Mr. Thurman there will tell you, it's not unheard of for a big company like a Fortune 500 company like, say, Wells Fargo or something like that to have, you know, engagements with 10 or 15 different small consulting companies to find the people that they need across the country.
Or more.
And I think that's important for them to understand. So that is just, I mean, I know in my past experience, MCI had somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 20 consulting companies all providing talent and services to them. That's
wow.
You know, and that's just commonplace. And it was nothing for them to say, we will pay you, you know, net 60 days, net 120 days for that consult.
Right. Right.
You know, and that was commonplace, and it still is.
Wow.
All right.
And thank you, William, for those comments. And I think, and I may be using the wrong term here, Joe, but what's the term when you have like a premier staffing company, whatever, someone who is kind of like a prime within an organization, but then they in turn go and farm it out to other staffing companies. So, you know, a client company may have this one company showing on the books, but then they're farming it out to 20 other people.
Right. I mean, yeah, that's standard practice within different companies. You'll have an on-site or a prime vendor or something like
that.
There
you go, prime vendor. That was the term I was looking for.
Yeah, all of the other staffing firms funnel through this one entity. And basically, that's an on-site service that they help them to manage, you know, the fact that they do have 30, 40 or more vendors that they're using for different things. And so that's a burdensome process. So, yeah, that's normal.
There. Exactly. Let's take another call, Cliff.
Okay, we have Lori on the line. Are you there, Lori?
Yes, I am here.
Okay, what's your comment?
Well, my comment was it is common for IT personnel to work multiple contracts. I'm presently working multiple contracts. I've done it in the past. I even know people who've worked four at a time. This is nothing that is new. It's nothing that is unusual. So I don't understand why the jury was not informed that this is a commonplace thing.
Well, like I said earlier, the prosecution didn't want to inform the jury. I mean, they wanted to keep the jury ignorant of this situation. And so, and it's good, Cliff and Ethel, that we're getting call after call, you know, that,
yeah,
that you know, folks who have worked in the industry and, you know, saying that, no, this is something that they've either they've done themselves or they've heard of it being done.
Or still doing.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, this is not anything
and
that's,
you know, I just got, you know, one of our production support team just sent me this information from the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Mm-hmm.
From December 2011, it says more than 7 million people in the U.S. are holding two or more jobs. Now, why is it so difficult for the prosecutor and you know, it's not difficult for him to understand. He did it purposely to basically skew the jury's, you know, their mindset or their outlook on what happened in the case. But that's what we're here for, to make sure that the common person, that the public understand this happens all the time. And when the Bureau of Statistics and Labor show that, hey, 7 million people in this country are holding down two or more jobs, with the economy the way that it is, one job is not enough. And then if you have the skills, if you've gone out there, you've worked hard, or you've gone to college, you've worked your way up the ladder per se, and you have the skills to work more than one job, why not work more than one position? Why not better yourself, your situation? There's nothing unusual about
that. That's why, you know, go ahead, Ethel.
No, I was just going to say, you know, with that jury, if this jury was not familiar with IT and staffing and stuff like that, they're going to believe what it is that he's telling them, you know?
Exactly.
They're going to say, well, yeah, that makes sense.
Like, yeah, that makes sense. It makes sense to them, and it goes to the fact of, you know, the issue with this jury of your peers.
Absolutely.
If they are, they are. When they're not, they're not.
They weren't.
If they don't understand the concept of working multiple jobs of technology industry, you cannot call them juries of your peers. And that's not a flack on them. It's just, it is what it is.
Wow.
And for the prosecutor, Matthew Kirsch, take those jurors and basically to abuse them like that and to cause them to come back with guilty verdict, it's criminal.
Yeah, this was a very good subject to talk about. I'm glad we got an opportunity to dispel a lot of the mess that the prosecutor talked about as far as the IRP6. For those callers who were left in the queue, we had several other folks that looks like that they wanted to call in to either talk about the petition or some of the other subject matter. It's a great show. Joe, thanks for joining us. Your closing thoughts, if you can give us something in about 10 to 15 seconds.
To Cliff's point and to Ethel's point, I mean, just the jury of your peers, you know, this industry has a lot of twists and turns, and it's easy to paint the picture that something was wrong was done. But, I mean, it's everything was normal, standard business practice, and you know, it's just a travesty what the prosecutor did here.
Absolutely. Again, Joe Thurman, thanks for joining us and talking about
stuff.
And Ethel, how can folks help us out as far as helping the IRP6?
505, I'm sorry, I gave you the middle, 202-514-2003 or 2005. Eric Holder, Attorney General, High Sheriff, Give them a call, y'all.
Give them that number again. One more time.
202-514-2003 or 2005.
Awesome. Also, go out to change.org. Sign that petition. Thanks to everybody that signed that petition this evening. Man, that number just kept climbing. Don't stop just because we're going off the air. Cliff, what do you got?
All right, I want to say thanks again to Joe Thurman for joining us in the studio for our exoneree, Mark Clemens. We're there with you. We want to say thank you to our chat room guests, to our production support team, K&D Productions in the back room, Captain Kyle, Dustin Jackson, Neil Skillet's girl, and to the truth. We know you're out there and that you're listening. We appreciate it.
Jay Arrington, Maryland Daily Examiner. Thanks, Jay. And we're going to be posting your latest article here shortly before the weekend. Duke Brooks for the conservativenationmedia.com. Thanks for everything that you do. And also Scott Osborne, Contending for Truth Radio. Join us each Tuesday and Thursday on Blog Talk Radio. This is a Just Cause Radio, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Thanks for tuning in. Good night, America.
Good night, y'all.
Good night.